All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, Chief Warrant Officer number 2 in Vietnam 1969, helicopter pilot type person. Want to welcome you to our today's program. We're going to be talking about helicopters all day, so this is kind of one of our installments of Rotorhead Radio, as we call it here. Our guest, when I get around to introducing him, is Colin Cohen, and Colin is a helicopter pilot, and he's written a book all about helicopter pilots from the Vietnam era. So I'm really excited to talk with Colin shortly. But I want to make sure that we get into the program. I got congratulations really for one of our favorite sponsors out there, and that is Veterans Matter. And veteransmatter.org is an organization that places homeless veterans into housing. And they just placed their 5,000th homeless veteran in this across the country, actually. They started in Toledo. But so congratulations to Veterans Matter. And if you want to help them out, they're always looking, obviously, for fundraising and opportunities. You can go to veteransmatter.org. In the news, of course, for many, many of you, you're probably aware that Joe Galloway passed away this week. Joe was a frequent guest here on Veterans Radio. He was one of the co-authors of We Were Soldiers Once and Young, and a number of, a lot of other books. He is also one of the very few, and in fact, I think he's the only journalist that received a Bronze Star with Valor for his participation in the Battle of the Idrang Valley back in 1965, I think it was. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about Joe later on in the program, but I wanted to remind you that if you go to veteransradio.net and go up into the, the question box there and put in Joe Galloway, I think there's about 5 or 6 programs that he was on in Veterans Radio, starting off long time ago with Gary Lilly when Gary was still alive. So I encourage you to do that. Before we get into our interview right now, I want to make sure that we thank our sponsors. And of course, you all know that we can't do Veterans Radio without our sponsors. So first of all, I want to make sure that we thank Legal Help for Veterans. They specialize in veterans disability claims. Give Legal Help for Veterans a call at 800-693-4800. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as the NVBDC, the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, you can go to their website. That's nvbdc.org. Can't do business with the government unless you are as a veteran-owned business, unless you're certified. The Eisenhower Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, they specialize in treatment for veterans, first responder, and athletes, anyone suffering from post-traumatic stress, TBI, any sort of closed head injury. This is what they specialize in. They have residential and outpatient treatment, both here in Ann Arbor and also in Jacksonville, Florida. For more information, you can give them a call at 800-554-5543, or you can go to their website, EisenhowerCenter.com. U.S. Wings, the manufacturers and distributors of the finest leather jackets, flight jackets in the world. They also manufacture and sell all sorts of military paraphernalia. You can go to USWings.com for more information. And make sure that you go and you register to win the flight jacket, which will be given away next week on our benefits program. So again, go to veteransradio.net. The picture of the jacket is there. Click on that and register to win. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan is one of our sponsors. And of course, our local veteran service organizations, the Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, American Legion Post 46, and VFW Post 423. Learn more about these organizations and the services that they provide on our website at veteransradio.net/our sponsors. If you would like to become a sponsor, same information is right there. Just go to veteransradio.net/sponsors. There are all kinds of things that have been going on, as I mentioned in the last week, especially with, the collapse of the Afghanistan government, the attempts to get everybody out. I just wanted to make mention here because there are a lot of Vietnam veterans I know, myself included, that just said, here we go again. And for all of us out there, just try to relax and try to, you know, calm down. It's not the same. I think that, you know, I think that the powers that be hopefully have a plan. It always seems to me that everybody I've ever talked to that went to the war, you know, the Army War College, Navy War College, whatever colleges that they went to, they always came up with a contingency plan for everything. And it just seems like whenever we get ourselves into a situation, much like we're doing right now in Afghanistan, that it's one of their contingencies that they don't ever seem to bring out of the filing cabinet and use. So we're hoping that they can get all those translators out. Anybody who's worked with the American government over there, we have to make an extra effort to get them out. We know what happened to many of the Vietnamese when we left Vietnam kind of, you know, pretty quickly ourselves. So we just want to make sure that that doesn't happen again. So open your arms, open your hearts. Pray as hard as you can that we can get as many of these people out before whatever is going to happen happens. So that's just one man's opinion. All right. So we're going to get into our program right now. As I mentioned today, we're going to be talking about helicopters and helicopter stories and pilots. And I'm really excited to bring our guest on right now. And that is Colin Calhoun. He's a writer of historical nonfiction, historical-based fiction. He's a patent attorney and a former Army helicopter pilot himself. That's kind of the cool part, I think. He received an Army commission in 1983, graduated with honors from the Aero Scout Track of Flight School. That wasn't there when I was there. In Fort Rucker, Alabama in 1984, served with distinction as a platoon leader with the 307th Attack Helicopter Battalion of the 7th Infantry Division, where he accumulated over 1,000 hours flying the Huey and the OH-58. He resigned his commission, went to law school, and then he decided for whatever reason, which we're going to find out, is to write a book about Vietnam helicopter pilots. So, Colin, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. It's a pleasure to be here.
The book is Mended Wings. Tell us how you came upon this topic and what was it that motivated you to write this book?
Well, you know, as you mentioned, I went to flight school in 1984, and all of the civilian flight instructors back then were all Vietnam vets. And, of course, you'd go out on the flight line and all of the Hueys that we were flying after we got through our primary part, you know, back then you guys probably went through Walters. We had primary at Rucker, and then you'd transition into the Hueys. And you go out on the flight line and you'd see these old Vietnam warbirds, because that's what we had to fly. And they all had, you're very familiar with the bullet holes that they would just patch with little square, like 1-inch square patches. They just put all over the fuselage, and you'd see those scattered all about. And there were some mornings I'd walk out there with a Vietnam vet as my instructor, and he'd look at an aircraft and he'd kind of smile and he'd say, you know, that's the aircraft I flew out of Benoit, you know, wherever it was and you could just see him look at it with this admiration, like, this is an aircraft that brought me home over and over again, never complaining. And here it is, and I'd see it again. And I honestly got the idea for this book way back then in 1984. I thought, man, I wish I could write stories about these guys. And then I went on to Fort Ord, and all of the senior warrant officers and the field grade officers were all Vietnam vets. These guys, Dale, you guys were my heroes. You taught me how to fly. You taught me how to be the best officer I could be. And I always wanted to do something to kind of repay that back. And it took me it was a long and windy road, but I finally got there when the book came out this June. So that was sort of the impetus for doing it. The Purple Heart twist to it, I decided I wanted to do something a little bit different. There's a lot of helicopter books out there, a lot of autobiographies and so forth. And I thought it would be interesting to, to tell stories of not just people in combat, but their life stories, the whole generational story from growing up as a kid and getting into high school and whether their draft number came up or they volunteered or both. And, going through flight school, as you know better than I, flight school back then was a very interesting experience. And then, you know, getting to Vietnam, but then telling their story after they came home. And I thought the best way to do that was to do it through guys who had suffered a physical injury in combat. And I refer to my vets by the chapters. So I say my chapter 3 vet, who's a guy named Chris Kilgore, is actually someone that I know very well, who I met after I graduated from law school. He's a Purple Heart Vietnam vet, Loach pilot. And, I got interested in his story. And that's when it sort of the light bulb went off. And I said, you know what, this needs to be a book about Purple Heart veterans. And that's how we got here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I appreciate the motivation for writing this book, because when I came back in 1970, I was an instructor pilot for a year and a half. And I can remember feeling a little guilty because, I'm sending these young boys, I'm a year older than they were, but sending them back to Vietnam and, hoping that they survive. So some of our training, and probably, as you mentioned, having the Vietnam instructor pilots, probably showed you some things that weren't in the manual. Yes. To make sure that that you would survive.
Yeah. Well, the thing, and I mentioned this in the prologue, but you guys were really the coolest cats I'd ever bumped into. I mean, I mentioned in there that you could take a helicopter and bleed off darn near all the rotor blade and have it just almost upside down, and suddenly this calm voice would come on the controls and say, I'm on the controls, and about 2 seconds later, you're straight and level over Alabama, like nothing ever happened.
That's true. Those famous words, I've got it.
Yeah, I've got it. Yeah, you've got it. But they were cool, and just nothing fazed him at all. And for good reason. They'd been through a lot. They had a lot of hours under their belt, and they knew those aircraft backwards and forwards. But I sure looked up to them, and I'm happy that Mended Wings. Mended Wings is really my tribute to your generation, Dale. It's 10 guys, 10 veterans, and I'm telling the generational story of those helicopter pilots, the guys that fought for the Army from, our first guy was injured in November of 66, and the last guy was injured in November of 72, when, as you know, there weren't many Americans left. About the only Americans there were air crews, really.
I was reading all of these stories and in talking with other veterans, the Vietnam War evolved over that approximately, 10-year time period that I'm thinking about, until we get up to 72 and 73 type of thing. But there were so many different phases of the war. Yeah. And so when I was reading through the stories, starting off with the first one, hold on, let me get my notes out here, Dale. Here we go. When Warrant Officer Pruitt Helm,
yeah,
Pruitt Helm, and his story in 1966, and then as you mentioned, you go all the way up to 72, and just the variety of missions that they flew. One of the stories here is Mike Bongart. Who happened to be in the same unit I was in Vietnam. I did not know him at the time, but I'd heard stories about him.
Yeah.
And, you can get hurt flying in these things over there, periodically. And of course, every one of these soldiers in here did get hurt in one way or another. And what you do so effectively is you give us the background of them. And I think that's what I really enjoyed in reading the stories. I mean, as you mentioned, you've read, and I'm probably the same books I've read, Chicken Hawk and all these other things about the autobiography of helicopter pilots, but I never really looked at the background of them. What type, sort of a World War II type of thing where you're talking about somebody who has won an award and then you find out that they came from, Nowhereville, Nebraska, no offense, Nebraska, but, and, grew up in a large family, small family, did well in school, didn't do so well in school.
Yeah, we had a few of those in there.
I knew a lot of warrant officers like that. Great pilots, but, not the greatest students the first time they went through college.
Yeah.
But the idea is, let me back up a little bit. Let's let's just talk about some of these guys, and I'll let you choose. I mean, I'd like to talk about Bongardt. We can save him for a little bit later.
Okay. Yeah, we can save Bongardt. But you're right, and I want to just before we get into that, your earlier point. I think one of the cool things about Minted Wings, and honestly, Dale, I didn't intend this when I set out. You know, I set out saying, well, I'm going to tell stories about 10 vets. And I had an agent who was representing me, and he looked at it and he said, you know what, this needs to be in chronological order, and you need to have historical bridges between them so people can follow it. And so then I started arranging the 10 vets in chronological order, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, I've got the whole war here. This starts in 66 and it carries through 72, and I've got everything in between. So there's a lot of serendipity here, but I agree with you. I think Mended Wings gives you a flavor of how different the experience is, particularly if you were a radical difference from 1966 when Pruitt-Helm was there with the 4th Infantry Division. He was in D Troop, 1st of the 10th. And they literally put the unit together stateside, and they show up and everyone's new in country, right? There's no grizzled veteran there who's going to say, yeah, I've been here 10 months. I've got 1,000 hours or 2,000 hours. I'm going to teach you what to do. These guys were learning on the fly when they got there. And then you go all the way up to Michael Byrne, who, as you note in the book, Mike gets his 5th Purple Heart in 72. yeah, he was a glutton for punishment.
I think so.
Yeah. And I asked him, you know, because he actually had 5 Bronze Stars too, which I didn't mention in there, but he's got 5 Purple Hearts. And his chapters are appropriately named 5th Time's a Charm. And there's some personal reasons behind that as well. But by the time Mike is there, this is no longer a low intensity war. This is a high intensity war. They're flying against a lot of anti-aircraft emplacements. And his mission that day was pin the box, which I'd never heard of before. But, you know, they're basically out there just flying till they come into contact with some anti-aircraft weapon. And they say, OK, that's one pin on the box. Then they come at it from another direction until they get 4 pins in the box. And then they just call in the B-52s and say, blow up everything in the middle. Obviously, they're protecting something. But they didn't dare fly in there because they wouldn't have made it back out. So it was a lot different.
No, the weaponry evolved during that time period as well. We were taught, you know, 1,500 feet, you're out of effective ground fire range. I don't necessarily believe that all the time, but especially when you'd come back with a hole in your rotor blade or something, go, where did that come from? Radar controlled rockets, heat seeking rockets, everything started coming out as the war continued, as their weaponry got more sophisticated and our defenses got more sophisticated. I learned a lot from reading the book about the skills that were needed and the techniques that were needed to avoid getting yourself in trouble on a fairly regular basis, and especially the different types of aircraft. You know, I flew Slicks, which those are troop carriers for our civilian audience. And we had what they called Charlie model gunships, which were just modified Hueys with bigger blades and a little bit, you know, more lift to them. And then the Cobras came into Vietnam while I was there. And the up north, they, you know, all around me, I wasn't aware of these things. It's amazing how much tunnel vision I had, with their hunter killer teams. And in many of your stories about the Loaches or the OH-6s, which were those, they sort of like a hummingbird.
Yeah. The Loach guys are definitely a different breed, and we've got them all in here. Like you say, we've got Huey drivers. We got Huey gunship drivers. We got Loach drivers. We got Cobra drivers. And the Loach guys, like you say, I mean, they're down there doing, it's really the modern equivalent of the cavalry scout, right? They are down in the dirt looking at footprints. I mean, they're so low, they're looking at footprints through their chin bubble. And not only that, but if there's water in the footprint, if it's clear, it tells them one thing. If it's muddy, it tells them something else. And that's how close they are to what's really going on. But I'm happy to talk about some of these guys. We can start with Pruitt, you know, when he first went over there. And I think it's a good example of just how this book is structured, how Mended Wings is structured. So what I do is, as I mentioned, each chapter is in chronological order. And since Pruitt showed up in Vietnam in 1966, he's the first guy in the book that I had. And we start his chapter with the historical bridge, tells you what's going on. And then the next thing you get is the action where he's headed towards, you know, disasters, maybe not the right word, but he's, you know, that he's headed towards something that's not good. And in Pruitt's instance, he's flying a C model Huey gunship in support of an insertion. There's going to be a major battle that's about to happen. They're going to go rescue some special forces guys that were outmanned and about to get annihilated. So they send in the grunts, and Pruitt's C model is escorting these grunts in, and they walk into what I would call an anti-aircraft ambush, quite frankly. And they didn't know it was going to happen, but it did. And as Pruitt's Huey flies through the kill zone and comes out the other side, it's badly damaged. It's smoking. They can tell there's something wrong with it. And, you know, Dale, as I'm sure you would attest, they had every right to just keep going and head home at that point.
Right. Yeah. You turn around. Yeah. It's not a bad idea. But
yeah, you just leave. But as happens over and over and over again with all of these guys and every Army helicopter pilot I've ever met, that wasn't the way they were programmed. And the way they looked at it was they were there to protect the grunts. And the grunts were taking fire, and they were the gunships in the air. And by gosh, they were going to turn around and get back in the fight. So they turn the aircraft back around. They head back towards the battle. And as they're flying back towards the kill zone, the C model gunship in front of them explodes in midair. And that's where they're headed. And then I stop the action at that point. I know that's a teaser, but that's the way all these chapters are set up. And we go back and we learn about Pruitt growing up. He was a kid in Aurora, Colorado. We learn about his family and the things that he went through and the stuff he did in high school. Pruitt was one of your guys you talked about that didn't really want to do well academically, super bright guy. He just wasn't motivated and kicked around for a while at Breckenridge, you know, doing various things. Eventually joined the National Guard and then decided he'd go to flight school. And so we talk about him going to flight school. We talk about him. He went to Korea, was his first assignment out of flight school. And there's some interesting stories there about flying a general round and doing some quail hunting and various things that he did in Korea. And then we work him forward to, you know, preparing to get the 4th Infantry Division to Vietnam, and we get him to Vietnam. And now we get back to the action. And now I let the reader know what really happened to Pruitt. And I don't want to give too much away because I think that Pruitt's chapter in Mended Wings is amazing, just like all these are. But as you know, Dale, Huey gets shot down. They spend an absolutely harrowing night in no man's land between the two battling sides. They've got the North Vietnamese on one side and the American Army in the other. And they're in the middle of it with just trying to survive the night. And then a really kind of surreal rescue the next morning that, you know, if you didn't know what happened, you think it was kind of a dream that happened to him. But I don't want to leave you there because, again, this is an explanation of your generation of pilots. So I take you forward. I take Pruitt to being medevaced out through his surgeries, through all the things he's doing. And eventually we get him home. And unfortunately, Pruitt is a paraplegic when he gets back.
Right.
You know, and you could end the story there and it'd be a fantastic story. But Pruitt's an amazing guy. And he overcomes that disability and accomplishes really some truly phenomenal things. And I walk you through that and how he did that. He's a very stubborn guy. He did not go with the medical convention that was prescribed for him. And eventually we take you all the way up to where he is today, you know, happily with his wife and his grandchildren. And so that's how each chapter in Mended Wings is structured. And every one of these guys is different. They all had different experiences, but every story is a story about a hero. And there's thousands of you guys. Don't get me wrong. You know, this is like a sample of 10 heroes.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was going to ask you. You know, how did you choose these 10 specific guys?
Well, that's kind of an interesting story because once I decided to write this book, how do you find 10 veterans to write about, right? And then it occurred to me, and this will make sense to you, I put an ad out in the VHPA Aviator, which there's an organization called the Vietnam Helicopter Pilots Association. I was actually at their convention in Charlotte just a couple weeks ago. And I put an ad in their magazine that comes out once every 2 months. And I said, did you get a Purple Heart in combat? Are you interested in telling your story? If so, go to my website. And on my website, I had a video that explained, I called it the Purple Heart Project at the time because I didn't have the Mended Wings title yet. And I had them fill out an application. And I had about 20 guys that said they wanted to do it. And then I had follow-up interviews. Eventually, we narrowed it down to 10 guys. And then once I had those 10 guys in place, I would start doing detailed interviews with each guy. And Dale, your generation, and really I'm not, I'm 59, so kind of my generation as well. We're more of a phone generation. We're not, I think you went from phone to video to now just text. You don't even bother to show up, but you're a phone generation. And so I did between 6 and 12 hours of phone interviews with each of these guys. And then I reached out to pilots that they flew with. I interviewed family members. I did research and tried to get as much information as I could. And I just worked on these one chapter at a time and, would work back and forth with the vet, getting answers to questions, trying to resolve discrepancies and try to get it as factually accurate as I can. And there was there's actually going to be a review that's coming out in the VHPA, this issue. And I thought it was very high praise that, the reviewer said that I didn't really use a lot of, hyperbole or exaggeration, that it was all just, I just played it straight. You know, I just told the stories are amazing enough. I don't need to exaggerate or anything like that.
There was no need to embellish these stories, although over 50 years, they do get a little bit more exciting sometimes. as we tell them, we're talking with Colin Calhoun right now, and hopefully I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Yes. I don't want to
mess that up. He's the author of Mended Wings. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue with this story. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, please feel free. Give us a call, 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600. All you rotor heads and crew chiefs and gunners out there, you know, without the crew chiefs and gunners, these stories would have ended a lot sooner what you guys did to keep us in the air. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Army Captain Ed Freeman flew 14 rescue missions under intense enemy fire, saving 30 seriously wounded soldiers. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
As a flight leader, Freeman supported a heavily engaged American infantry battalion in the I Trang Valley in the Republic of Vietnam. The unit was almost out of ammunition after taking some of the heaviest casualties of the war, fighting off a relentless attack from a highly motivated, heavily armed enemy force. When the infantry commander closed the helicopter landing zone due to intense direct enemy fire, Freeman risked his own life by flying his unarmed helicopter through a gauntlet of enemy fire time after time, delivering critically needed ammunition, water, and medical supplies to the besieged battalion. His flights had a direct impact on the battle's outcome by providing the engaged units with timely supplies of ammunition critical to their survival. After medical evacuation helicopters refused to fly into the area due to intense enemy fire. Captain Freeman flew 14 separate rescue missions, providing life-saving evacuation of an estimated 30 seriously wounded soldiers, some of whom would not have survived had he not acted. All flights were made into a small emergency landing zone within 100 to 200 yards of the defensive perimeter, where heavily committed units were perilously holding off the attacking elements.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit VeteransCrisisLine.net. VeteransCrisisLine.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
We're back here on Veterans Radio. Our guest today is Colin Calhoun. His book is entitled Mended Wings. It's a story of 10 helicopter pilots in Vietnam. I just wanted to read a little thing from this prologue that I think will set the stage for our audience here. It says about roughly 40,000 Americans served as helicopter pilots in Vietnam. Most of them were shot down or crashed at least once during their tour. About half the helicopters they flew never came back. Over 2,000 of the pilots also never came back, making up about 7% of all American deaths suffered during the Vietnam War. Many more pilots came home wounded, some maimed for life. I never realized, I guess, you know, the numbers that you mentioned in here, Colin. 40,000 of us were pilots. Everybody either crash landed or had a forced landing or got shot down. And I was, you know, of course, I'm time tripping in my head going, yeah, did that, check mark, check. Learned how to do auto rotations, thank God. And again, for people, you can get a helicopter to the ground. Sometimes it gets down there really smoothly, sometimes not so much. But and the idea of where your helicopters are, my helicopter, which was Sky Chief 188, ended up with the Vietnamese Army. It stayed in country. And as Colin mentioned, Vietnam Helicopter Pilots Association, for anybody who's interested in this topic, has got archives of every aircraft that was in Vietnam, every helicopter that went down in Vietnam, every crewman that was killed, unfortunately, is in their database. And it's a great site to go to. It's just VHPA.org. And you can find all kinds of information in there about the different units and so forth. I mean, they changed names of units. We were an assault helicopter company for a while. Then we were an aviation company for a while. And I don't know what that was all about. But, this book was fun to read, but it was for me, but it was difficult to read as well.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Dale. And one of the interesting things that happened to me while I was writing this book is I think that the vets that are in here, they kind of treated me after they got to know me as sort of their baby cousin or their baby brother or something like that, because that was sort of the generational difference. And I flew helicopters, so I was able to talk the technical stuff, but I'd never been to Vietnam. But they, for whatever reason, and I'm honored that this happened, they really opened up and they really told me things that they hadn't told people in a long time, or maybe not at all. And when I got done with each chapter, I would send it to them to review because I wanted them to be comfortable with their stories. I mean, technically they were under contract. I could have written whatever I wanted, but that's not the way to approach a book like Mended Wings. Mm-hmm. So I'd send them the chapter and I'd say, tell me what you think. And it was strange. A lot of them, I wouldn't hear back for 4 to 6 weeks, sometimes a couple of months. And they'd finally call me back and they would say, you know, Colin, you nailed it. You got my life. You got it all down. And I'm so sorry I didn't call you back. But to read it that way, to look at my life and read those things, was like pulling a scab off. And it took me a while to digest it before I could get back to you. And then for some of them, they would say, now, let's talk about this, because it's in my chapter, and I've never told anybody this before. I haven't even told my wife. And of course, the first thing I say, well, for by all means, give the chapter to your wife, you know, let her read it. And then we'd have a discussion about whether we could leave that in the chapter or not. And a lot of times I would try to point out that, you know, okay, ultimately this is your call, but we're not doing this just for you. We're doing it for your generation, and people need to understand the kind of stresses that you were under, the things you had to deal with and overcome. And you are now, it was kind of a representative of your generation. So with that in mind, would what do you think about leaving this in? And more often than not, we would leave it in. There were a couple things that we ended up that they just couldn't go there. But, I was honored that they trusted me to disclose those kind of details. Just like I'm sure, Dale, you've got some that you're probably not going to tell our radio audience, but maybe someday we'll get to learn them.
The thing is that it brought up so many different feelings. There was feelings of satisfaction that I had done a really good job. I had accomplished, quote, my mission. I had taken troops in, taken troops out, did everything I could to make sure that the guys on the ground, you know, got out safely. I didn't realize what they did on the ground until much later, when I became more involved in organizations and found out what infantry people actually did. I was not a what I call real live officer, so I didn't know all of the planning that went involved into a lot of these missions. You know, we would just, you know, go to the operations tent, and they'd say, okay, you know, you're chalk three, follow the lead, and here's where the LZ is. And that would be all they would tell us sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that part, some of the memories of people that that I lost in country, that I, you know, when you talked about the ship blowing up in front of you, we had a command and control ship that did that with me. And, you know, the desperation that we all felt of trying to get down to that ship to rescue, turns out nobody, because we couldn't, because they were all killed. But, you know, that desire to save any American that was, this sounds really bad, but we would do anything possible to save an American on the ground that was in trouble. And I think that's what everybody in the military goes through, you know, is your troops are in trouble. We've got to get them out. And so you would do irrational things, you know, to go and get them. And you talked about some of these things in the book. And as I mentioned, we're talking with Colin Calhoun. His book is Mended Wings, and it's all about helicopter pilots and some of the traumatic events that they went through, and how some of them came through and survived, and unfortunately some of them did not. And how it affected their family. You talk about the history of even communication when somebody was shot down. You know, did the family, how did they hear, and so forth? I think our, in law term, I'm trying to think of the terminology here, is I don't think I'll get in any trouble anymore. I think everything has been released to the public about the missions that we flew. And I spent a lot of time in Cambodia.
Yeah.
And
did you have to find one of those 50 year?
Oh yeah. Every time we would seem to go out, you had, you know, this, you couldn't tell anybody anything that you ever did. We didn't wear dog tags. We didn't wear any identification. The aircraft were camouflage, no IDs. You mentioned that in the story about the 195th, and there were other units that did the same thing. But the point is that when our aircraft crashed in Cambodia, they never told the crewmen's families what had happened to them. They just said, well, the aircraft is missing.
Yeah.
And that hung in my mind for, you know, I got home 2 months, a little over 2 months after that aircraft crashed. And the first thing I did almost before anything is I called the parents of one of the pilots and told them exactly what had happened. And they were so grateful. And I can remember sitting on the bed in my in-law's house crying like crazy, and they're crying on the other end of the line. And the idea of them not knowing what happened to their family, what happened to their son, you know, and in today's world, of course, it's sons and daughters.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that the process has improved.
Well, I hope so. Yeah. But, it is awful.
That was the stuff that was going through my head as I'm reading these different stories. So you can tell it has an effect. And I encourage all of my helicopter friends out there to read this book. It's entitled Mended Wings. It's 10 great stories of survival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned about the helicopter pilots getting shot down over and over again. Every time I meet a helicopter pilot from Vietnam who's gone into combat, I ask the question, were you shot down? And I'm sure there's guys out there that would say no. I've yet to meet one that, at least the guys that were flying combat missions in Vietnam, I've never met a helicopter pilot that wasn't shot down at least once. And most of them were shot down several times.
Well, yeah. Who's the guy at the end of this, the end of the book? Fifth Time's the Charm?
Yeah, Michael Byrne. Yeah, he got shot down quite a bit. And I do want to, you did want to talk a little bit about your comrade who flew in the same unit that you did.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit. We've got about 15 minutes, actually about 10, but let's talk about, First Lieutenant Mike, Bongard.
Yeah. Mike is a very interesting guy, and I met him for the first time in person at VHPA a couple weeks ago, which was just an absolute delight. Mike is 80 years old. He is still super fit. He does 7 to 8 miles a day in walking, and just as sharp as a tack. And he was just a delight to meet. But Mike's story is definitely different from the others in that he suffered a brain injury. And in again, I'm not going to give away everything that's in the book, but he successfully gets his Huey on the ground, and he's wading through a rice paddy when a mortar round goes off and a piece of shrapnel lodges into the back of his head. And his crew actually leaves him for dead. They let him slip back into the water. And but for an Army medic named Dwayne Garber, who just happened to be in the area, saw him slip into the water. And the crew said, don't worry about him, he's dead. And Mike went over, pulled him out, and saved his life. Now, and I go through in the book that Mike goes through some really amazing out-of-body experiences during that chapter that are very specific in detail as he moves in and out of his body underwater and back out again. And he has some very unusual, is probably a soft word, circumstances that seem to be preordained. And that's why I call the chapter Preordained. And eventually he becomes a minister, a Presbyterian minister. But Mike ended up with a brain injury. They had to remove part of his occipital lobe in the back. Now, if you had to guess if he ever went back on flight status, you'd say absolutely not.
Right.
But amazingly, he does a second tour in Vietnam.
Which sounded worse than the first one.
Yeah. And a couple of funny things that aren't in the book, Dale, so I'm going to mention them since he was in your unit. But first of all, this is not funny, but it was some additional information. His rescue out of that rice paddy was actually on the nightly news, on ABC Nightly News, because they just happened to have a film crew on a medevac Huey that was sent into the battle. And I've seen the footage. You can actually see them pulling Mike through the water and throwing him onto the medevac like cordwood, you know, just like they did, just throwing the guys on there. And then that thing skedaddling and getting the heck out of there. But so he was on the nightly news. He didn't realize that till much later. But here's kind of a funny one that I think you'll appreciate. There's a picture in, because I have pictures for all these guys. You can see them when they're kids and in Vietnam, and you can see them later. There's a picture in there that you might have wondered about. And the subtitle on the picture is Captain Bongard on his second tour of Vietnam, sporting a non-Purple Heart injury. I don't know if you remember that.
I do. He had a big black eye.
Yes, he's got a big black eye. And so what was that? That was a non-Purple Heart injury. Well, as you know from reading the book, Mike was really interested in motorcycles. And there was a guy who had a motorcycle on base. And his commanding officer made it very clear that no one was to ride that motorcycle, period, end of story. And, of course, one night, Mike is getting drunk at the officer's club and the motorcycle's outside. And so you can imagine one thing leads to another. He talks the guy out of his keys and he gets on that motorcycle and he's going up and down the base when all of a sudden, and the base has been evacuated because there's a hurricane coming. So there's not many people on the base. There's just a skeleton crew. A Jeep appears in the distance and he's convinced it must be the MPs who are going to come and arrest him for being out riding this motorcycle on this post that's supposed to be deserted because the hurricane's coming. And so Mike starts headed back towards, he figures if I can get back to the officers club and park it and go inside, they won't know who was on it. Unfortunately, he loses control of the bike and lands head first. And that's how he got that black eye, was by illegally riding a motorcycle around the base. But
I can kind of relate to that. I'm looking at the book, the pictures right now with a really nice black eye there. And but the picture above it is he's got himself, it looks like an orange Honda motorcycle, which looks exactly like the one I had back at Fort Rucker. Because as a pilot, you always had to have a motorcycle and a muscle car.
Yes, that was a requirement, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, because we had a Pontiac Le Mans, and there were Cutlasses and GTOs and all kinds of vehicles. And,
yeah, Corvettes. Yeah, I'm sure when you pulled into a Fort Rucker or Fort Walters, the parking lots were filled with muscle cars. That's for sure.
Absolutely. This picture just cracks me up because he's got this striped polyester pants on and the big wide white belt. So there, everybody out there, you have to go and get this book. The stories are just fantastic, but the pictures are very reminiscent of what life was like 50 years ago. I feel like I'm looking at, something from World War I. I didn't realize that I was at that point in my career, but
I just told you this story that's not in the book. One of the hardest things for me, Dale, in writing this book was what to leave out, because I had already set a page limit. I said, okay, these chapters need to come in at between 6,000 and 8,000 words a chapter, or this book's just going to be out of hand. It needs to be readable. And you can imagine when I'm going through the things you read about Mike Bungart and all the things that happened to him, there are lots of things. I took what I thought were the most interesting and most pertinent for the story arc to get to know him and his life. But it was hard to edit it down and get it down to something that was concise. That was probably the hardest thing for me in writing this book.
Well, I could certainly understand it. I mean, it's hard to cover, not only their life outside the Army, but the 365 days that they had in country, which, not every day was a flying day. And some of those other off flying days were probably sometimes as dangerous as flying days were. When you have the, attitudes and some of the immaturity that we had over there at the time, but we concentrated on our job. We did our job the best that we could. We thought we were very, most of us were very good pilots, and the Army did a great job in training us. And because of that training, more of us survived, thankfully, than didn't, which is a good thing for the military at that time. I think the different aircraft that you talk about, and I know that we're running out of time here, is, we talked about Hueys, we had gunships, we had Cobras, we have Loaches, we have Chinooks are even mentioned in there. Yeah. Everybody's in there. And so I encourage anybody who's interested in Army aviation to check this out, because some of these people not only went on you know, they stayed in the military and they continued flying. Some of them left the Army and went to different services, ended up as jet jockeys. I had a good friend who just passed away recently who ended up in the Marines and was Reagan's helicopter pilot for Marine One. So these are awesome people. And Colin, I want to thank you so very much for writing this book. I'm going to give you a minute to tell people where everything is available and more about, you know, your other books that you've written.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. So Mended Wings, your best bet is to get that on Amazon. So it's Mended Wings by Colin P. Cahoon. And you can also go to my website if you'd like some more information about this book or the other books that I've written. And that website is www.ColinPCahoon. So it's C-O-L-I-N-P as in Paul, Cahoon, C-A-H-O-O-N.com. My other books are completely different genre, Dale. And I actually kind of had to take a break from those so I could write this book. But my first book is The Man with the Black Box, which is historical fiction, but it's mystery thriller. It's 1905. It starts out in London. And it's the first Moroccan crisis. So we have some historical figures in there, Lord Lansdowne, Teddy Roosevelt. And it's fantasy fiction. It's more, the best description I ever heard of it is when somebody told me, you know, this is kind of like Sherlock Holmes chasing Dracula around. Okay. It's a very different genre. And that book was followed by a sequel called Charlie Calling. And both of those books, again, are available on Amazon. And it's the same type genre. It's 1908, which is the Bosnian crisis. Both these almost kicked off World War One. So it's kind of an alternative explanation for what happened in World War One. But I knew I had to write Mended Wings. I knew I had to get it done. And I decided to take a break from that genre because while I wanted to do this as an homage to your generation, Dale, I want to do it while you guys are still here and can appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's the best part. I want to thank you very much for being on the program, Colin, and I hope to have you back, especially if you write another one or we need to talk more about some of these guys.
I'd love to, and thank you for your service, Dale, and it's been a blast being here with you this afternoon.
Thank you very much. Colin Cahoon, the book is Mended Wings. Go to Amazon and get that. All right, we're going to end the program today just pretty quickly. I mentioned earlier that I'm a mess about this. That Joe Galloway passed away this last week. And Joe, as I mentioned earlier, was a great guest on Veterans Radio. He was a veterans advocate. He was a veteran supporter. He and his wife, Dr. Gracie, did everything they could to support veterans. As I mentioned, he received a Bronze Star for Valor for his participation in the Battle of the Iditarod Valley. He was a journalist. He wasn't in the military. He was down there writing about the war in Vietnam, ended up getting in this firefight, picked up a weapon, and next thing you know, luckily he survived. He is the co-author of We Were Soldiers Once and Young, and he's going to be missed by everyone out there that just, he was kind of our, I don't know. It was a great writer and human being. I think that you're going to enjoy the segment that we were ending the program on. I didn't mean to get so emotional with everybody here, but it's from the documentary on Under the Shadow of the Blade, and he's talking about helicopter pilots in this little segment. And so I want to thank you for listening to the program today. You can come back next week, and we're going to be talking about benefits. Make sure that you register for the jacket on the U.S. Wings so that we can give that away. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter. Go to our website. All of our programs are archived there. We need your support. We're going to be having a fundraiser called Buddy Money. So if you'd like to help us out, that is always greatly appreciated. We want to thank you for listening today. And we will be back next week. Stay tuned for Joe Galloway. You are dismissed.
I don't know if there's anybody here today who doesn't thrill to the sound of those blades. That familiar wop 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 is the soundtrack of our war, the lullaby of our younger days. To someone who spent his time in Nam with the grunts, I've got to tell you that noise was always a comfort. It meant someone was coming. Someone was coming to get our wounded. Someone was coming to bring us water and ammo. Someone was coming to take our dead brothers home. And eventually, someone was coming to give us a ride out of hell. Even today, when I hear it, I stop to catch my breath and think back those days. I love you guys as only an infantryman can. No matter how bad things were, if we called, you came. Down the green tracers and other visible signs of a real bad day, off to a real bad start. To us, you seemed beyond brave and fearless, that you come to us in the battle, in those flimsy, thin-skinned crates, and in the storm of fire, you would sit up there behind that thin plexiglass, seeming so patient and so calm and so vulnerable, waiting for the offloading and the unloading. We thought you were God's own lunatics, and we loved you. Still do. We're the fortunate ones. We survived when so many better men gave up their precious lives for us. We owe them a sacred debt to live each day to its fullest. What they're saying when you listen hard enough is this: we're at peace, and so should you be. And so should you be.